Translation. King Yudhishthira, who was very satisfied with the birth of Maharaj Parikshit, had the purificatory process of birth performed. Learned brahmanas, headed by Domya and Kripa, recited auspicious hymns. Purport. There is a need for a good and intelligent class of Brahmins who are expert in performing the purificatory processes prescribed in the system of Varnashram Dharma. Unless such purificatory processes are performed, there is no possibility of good population. And in the age of Kali, the population all over the world is of Shudra quality or lower for want of this purificatory process. It is not possible, however, to revive the Vedic process of purification in this age for want of proper facilities and good Brahmins. But there is the Pancharatrik system also recommended for this age. The Pancharatrik system acts on the Sudra class of men, supposedly the population of the Kali Yuga, and it is the prescribed purificatory process suitable to the age and time. Such a purificatory process is allowed only for spiritual upliftment and not for any other purpose. Spiritual upliftment is never conditioned by higher or lower parentage. After the, and then Prabhupada begins to describe the different ceremonies that are performed for these elevating reformatory stages in life. After the Garbhadhana purificatory process, there are certain other samskars, like Simantanayana, Sahabhakshanam, etc., during the period of pregnancy. And when the child is born, the first purificatory process is Jata Karma. This was performed duly by Maharaj Yudhishthira with the help of good and learned Brahmins, like Domya, the royal priest, and Kripacharya, who was not only a priest, but also a great general. Both these learned and perfect priests, assisted by other good Brahmins, were employed by Maharaj Yudhishthira to perform the ceremony. Therefore, all the samskaras, purificatory processes, are not mere formalities or social functions only, but they are all for practical purposes and can be successfully performed by expert Brahmins like Domya and Kripa. Such Brahmins are not only rare, but also not available in this age. And therefore, for the purpose of spiritual upliftment in this fallen age, the Goswamis prefer the purificatory processes under Pancharatrik formulas to the Vedic rites. Kripacharya is the son of the great rishi Saradvan and was born in the family of Gautama. The birth is said to be accidental. So now Prabhupada talks a little bit about how these sages came to be in the world. By chance, the great rishi Saradvan met Janapadi, a famous society girl of heaven, and the rishi Saradvan discharged semen in two parts. By one part, immediately, a male child, and by the other part, a female child, were born as twins. The male child was later on known as Kripa, and the female child was known as Kripi. Maharaj Shantanu, while engaged in chase in the jungle, picked up the children and brought them up to the brahminical status by the proper purificatory process. Kripacharya later became a great general like Dronacharya, and his sister was married to Dronacharya. Kripacharya later on took part in the battle of Kurukshetra and joined the party of Duryodhan. Kripacharya helped kill Abhimanyu, the father of Maharaj Parikshit, but he was still held in esteem by the family of the Pandavas due to his being as great a Brahmin as Dronacharya. This is quite amazing, isn't it? It's quite amazing. So he helps to kill Abhimanyu, and then when Abhimanyu's son is born, he gets to be the priest at the birth ceremony. Isn't that amazing? You killed the father of the child, but we will let you be the priest. Isn't that amazing? Such a great clarity of vision, free from lust, greed, and anger. When the Pandavas were sent to the forest after being defeated in the gambling game with Duryodhan, Dhritarashtra entrusted the Pandavas to Kripacharya for guidance. After the end of the battle, Kripacharya again became a member of the Royal Assembly, and he was called during the birth of Maharaj Parikshit for recitation of auspicious Vedic hymns to make the ceremony successful. Maharaj Yudhishthira, while quitting the palace for his great departure to the Himalayas, entrusted Kripacharya with Maharaj Parikshit as his disciple, and he left home satisfied because of Kripacharya's taking charge of Maharaj Parikshit. The great administrators, kings, and emperors were always under the guidance of learned Brahmins like Kripacharya, and thus were able to act properly in the discharge of political responsibilities. Hare Krishna. We see when we read a long purport like that why the Mahabharata was written. It's so much easier when you're telling a story to weave in the details. So Hare Krishna, I see some new faces. Do I see some new faces since a couple of weeks ago? Who have we got? Give me a little wave if you're new. Where are you all from? Israel, we know. Germany, du kommst sie aus Deutschland, good. Portugal. Oh, you come a long way, London. And Croatia. How about a round of applause for these new members? Thank you. Thank you for trusting Bhaktivedanta Manor with your spiritual future. Now, who's come for Be a Monk? The Be a Monk Challenge. Oh, look at this. Fantastic. And you've come for it. Where are you from? East London is a long way away. It's further than Israel, conceptually. So, but you haven't been for a long time. Fantastic. Who else has come to be a monk? You've come to be a monk. We can make you sannyasi also. It's a very good week for you. Yeah. You see, life is like a pyramid. 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 Meaning everything is a hierarchy. And in ISKCON, things are, we believe in a hierarchy of consciousness. But we also believe that less and less people process through that hierarchy to the highest stage of purification. Which means that socially speaking, it looks like a pyramid. And human society also looks like a pyramid, because there's a lot more people in lower consciousness than there is in higher consciousness. And these purificatory ceremonies that Prabhupada's talking about is trying to get people from stage one, level one. It's a big video game, isn't it, life? To get you from stage one to pick up all the different things you need to get to level two, level three, level four, level... If you don't make it in one lifetime, then you burn in hell forever. And for those of you who are here just for a week, let that be the lesson that you learn. That's not true. That's not true. Because we believe in reincarnation, which means that as much as you become purified or spiritually evolved in one life, to that percentage you arrive back in a future womb and you will begin your journey again. So it's a pathway of evolution. So people are put here in this world to take up that path. And along the way, they try to become free from what is known as upadi. Upadi means designations. Designations means a false label that you give yourself or other people give you. Usually quite a negative one, or usually one connected with your body, your color, your sex, your political affiliation. What else? And there's a lot of different labels. Your educational status, the job you like to do. These are all external to the real you, which is the soul within. The soul inside everybody is the same. Inside each human being, there's a quantum of consciousness, which is purely spiritual in nature. Wrapped around that soul is a different shaped body, a different evolved body, a different colored body, a different shaped body, a different sexual orientated body, a different gendered body. And the difficulty is that the soul, the pure consciousness, picks up on those externals and begins to label himself, herself, / as being a particular gender, nature, nationality, and yes, religion. And where does religion come in? Well, religion comes in when I kind of have an idea that I'm spiritual in nature, but I also have to be national, tribal. I have an affiliation with my family, and my family have always been Methodist. My family has always been Methodist. So therefore, as I'm growing up, what label do I give myself? I don't want to run away. It's like I took to Krishna consciousness, and my mother immediately said to me, well, if you want to be more spiritual, why can't you be more, you know, Christian? I said, well, Mama, as a Krishna consciousness, is a wonderful thing. And I tried to start explaining to her how wonderful it was. She said, yes, but you can be a better Christian. She said, you don't have to go to the Far East to get spiritual. I said, Mom, I said, Jesus was in the East. He was in the Middle East. She said, no. She said, no, he wasn't. And she picked up a book from her shelf and she said, look, Church of England. She said, you could always be a better Christian. So I kind of, you know, we went back and forward on that. Here I am today, still English, but very much trying to be a Vaishnava. So what is that Englishness? What is that tribalism? What is that nationalism? We're all prone to identify. So one life, we become Jewish. Next life, we become Christian. Next life, we become a Muslim. Next life, we become a Hindu. What religion is the soul? Thank you, Leo. Spoken like a true Jewish gentleman. He's just flown in from Israel. Yes. What religion is the Nefesh? The Nefesh? Huh? The Nefesh? What religion? Well, actually, ultimately, the soul is a member of the religion of love of God. That's the soul's religion. But the tribal identities and the geographical identities, these are extraneous to the soul. Prabhupada says that the soul is like a diamond, and the diamond has fallen in the mud. And the process of life, spiritual evolution, is to take that beautiful diamond, which is becoming encased in mud, and just gradually, gradually drip water on it so that it becomes free from the mud and it becomes reestablished as this shining diamond. What religion were you when you were a cat? Member of the cat religion? They walk around all day and their tail just goes like this. This is what they do. And the highest goal of life is milk. Get milk, get milk. This type of religion, Prabhupada says, is very conditioned by four tendencies: eating, mating, sleeping, and fighting. And to the extent that the soul is weighed down by these four stones, to this extent it won't be able to experience its real self. So whatever religious affiliation we have is often due to something in history, something in geography, and usually a very empowered leader. That's where we usually take our cues from. I'm a member of this, and our leader is this. So I have a saint, I have a rabbi, I have an imam, I have a priest, I have a guru. And these people form the leadership role. Then the people who form the brotherhood role, the sisterhood role, is usually the people who also give us a national identity, tribal identity, clan identity, like that. So if you look at any religious process, you'll see this. Some people think that this is an Indian religion. I'll go to Bhaktivedanta Manor for a week, I'll learn how to be a monk, and I'll be a member of an Indian religion, an Eastern religion. It's not Eastern. It's a Vishwa. It is universal. universal. You don't belong to any country. And therefore, we don't look at your passport when you come here. Anybody look at your passport when you came here? I don't know, maybe they do. Maybe they do. But if you go just a few miles to the south, you'll go to a wonderful part of London called Greenwich. It's spelt Greenwich. Greenwich. But there's a line on the land, and everybody likes to step one side of the line and the other side of the line and have their photograph taken in Greenwich. Why? Because one side is the Eastern Hemisphere, one side is the Western Hemisphere. In the late 1700s, someone invented a clock, a special clock. His name was John Harrison. And this clock would run even on a ship. And you may think, well, that's not such a great thing. But in those days, it was a great thing. Because as the ship was going this way and this way, normal clocks would lose time. So you set out on your journey on London time, and you came back, you know, hours later. And so they needed a clock that would be the same wherever they went in the world. Why? Because from the clock and the stars, you could exactly plot where you were. So they set at the Greenwich Observatory, set up a competition to see who could win. And they offered thousands of pounds to the person, the scientist, who could create a clock. And so when the clock was finally made, John Harrison won the competition. It took 80 or 90 years for people to decide that this is actually the invention and that all time in the world would begin from Greenwich. So that Greenwich calibrated the time and also the longitude. So at that time, when Victorian London was pretty much in charge of the shipping lanes, 85% of all the ships calculated their time from what was known as Greenwich Mean Time, still called GMT, and 0 degrees longitude. And so we went all over the world labeling places. And of course, if we traveled a very far way, that was called the Far East. And if we traveled a little bit further, that was called the other side of the world. But if we traveled just not so far, that was called the Middle East. But these are all London inventions. They're all places where, just like we went to Australia and we planted the flag. This is 1600s. We planted the flag in Australia and we said, this is British. That was a ridiculous proposition. You plant the flag in someone else's country and you claim it for your own simply by the fact that you've planted a stick and a piece of cloth. Then you take over the administration. Then you ruin the country. Then you burn the country down because you don't follow the principles that are tried and tested by the people who've lived in Australia for 20,000 years before you got there. And then you think of coming home to England. You strip the country of its water, strip the country of its minerals, burn all the forests, and then think, maybe we'd be better off in England. This is not civilization. This is taking a culture which is non-sustainable. Now, everybody talks about having a sustainable culture. Sustainable culture means you work with nature rather than against nature. That's all. That's all it means. And working with nature means that you work with God's nature, because it all belongs to God. Created by God, owned by God in the middle, and then it kills you in the end. Nature gives you birth, nature sustains you, and nature will kill you. So you might as well work with nature. So what has this got to do with the purport? Well, in this purport, Prabhupada is saying that there's a need for people who can take others through this reformatory process. There's a great need for spirituality in the world. And therefore, we need Brahmins who can help to take people through. Now, usually, we translate that as, well, we go out selling books, and whoever takes to the message, they get to become a member of the Krishna consciousness movement. And if they don't, then we no longer are interested in them. We're not really interested in becoming Brahmins for society. But there was two things always that Prabhupada talked about. One was called paramarthika, ultimate values. and one was called Vyavaharika, conventional values. And the procedure of spiritual evolution is to work with Vyavaharika, with conventional values, and at the same time install Paramarthika. Have I lost you? Everybody is a spirit soul, but they don't know it. Everybody needs a lot of lessons to get to that level, but they don't know it. And a Brahmin is someone who takes people on that journey. And a Brahmin is someone who has a unique level of tolerance, so that even if people take a long, long time, the Brahmin will always try to help them. That's a Brahmin. A Brahmin is not a self-interested person. You see, Paramarthika means that it is something of ultimate value. So the business of Krishna consciousness is twofold. One is to make yourself as pure as possible. That's your responsibility. That's your Paramarthika responsibility. To be the soul, to understand that you are the soul, and to go on your individual journey. But unless you balance that with Vyavaharika, with conventional understanding, you won't be able to help others. You'll just come to this conclusion that others are where they are, and I am where I am, and isn't that lucky for me? I'm greatly fortunate, and I'm a Brahmin. You see. So that means the Brahmin, the true Brahmin, is someone who extends himself or herself to others. How to do that? Well, you have to take into consideration where they are, what the level of conditioning is. You can work with a certain number of people who are conditioned in a certain way, and then you can work with certain numbers of people who are free in a certain way. What's the social responsibility of a Brahmin that is created by this movement? Prabhupada talks about the two things. In another purport, he says that in society there's a great need of Brahmins, there's a great need of people like that. You see, not this purport, but another purport. Another commentary. He's saying there's a great need because the world population is diminishing in consciousness. So the workers of this Krishna consciousness movement are meant to uplift. Well, how many people am I supposed to be responsible for? Well, maybe I can become a mentor and be responsible for 3 people. Okay. That was not Prabhupada's vision. Prabhupada had a great vision. It's incredible. I'm now 63, and I have another 7 years to go before I reach the age when Prabhupada even imagined getting on that boat and going all over the world. Isn't that incredible? Absolutely incredible. Of course, he had his ideas. He started in 1952. He started the League of Devotees, and if you ever look at the League of Devotees prospectus, it's very interesting. It's Prabhupada's first draft of what an international movement, a multi-language movement, would be, and how he was going to uplift human society. And there's a lot of prescriptions in there for advanced and initiated members, but there's prescriptions in there also for people who would not be initiated members. So unfortunately, sometimes we lose sight of the fact that this movement is not meant just for itself. It's not just meant for its own members. It's meant for doing something with the world. Ultimately, just see, Maharaj Yudhishthira engages a Brahmin because a Brahmin was a very important person. Devotee came to me and he said, I'm initiated as a Brahmin now. What shall I do with my life? Sometimes people do ask me that question. And they ask many others also. He said, well, what I really want to do is go and work for the United Nations and make a difference in the world. I said, please, go and do it. Go and do it. If there's a difference that you can... So now he's very happily engaged in the United Nations, making his difference, but as a Brahmin. There's another devotee who... He was raised in ISKCON, and he really took to heart Prabhupada's talking about starting farms. But he could see that the members of ISKCON weren't really kind of doing it. So now he's got 3 farms, I think it is, in Africa. And he's employing 600 local people on sustainable farms. So people can be inspired, but they can be inspired either to work with this movement, for this movement, but also with this movement for the world. There's a great need for people to do things in the world. It's no point if, like Nero, we fiddle with our violin while the whole city burns. The whole planet is burning, basically. And if the members of the Krishna consciousness movement are not taking this knowledge and putting it into practical action, that's the difference, you see. You see, when we talk about Archana, just understand how much Prabhupada wanted us to become trained as Brahmins. He says here, this is January 1976, and Prabhupada says, "Now, beginning from this year's Mayapur festival, the devotees will begin preparing for Bhakti Shastri examination." He'd mentioned it in 1969, but it took a while for devotees to understand, you know, he wants us to distribute books, he also wants us to read them and become qualified and sit exams. Why should we sit exams? We're already initiated. Isn't that the greatest exam? I'm twice initiated. Why should I sit another exam? What's at the end of it for me? A piece of paper? We don't need it. But Prabhupada said, no, Bhakti Shastri. Then he says something which has completely been forgotten, absolutely forgotten from Bhakti Shastri, the way it's taught in our movement today. It's very interesting. Then he says, therefore, connects with Bhakti Shastri exams, therefore, we require a guidebook for deity worship, Archana Padati, based on Hari Bhakti Vilas. Hari Bhakti Vilas is a manual whose contents were dictated by Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, Madhya Leela, 22nd chapter. And these contents were dictated to the Goswamis. Later on, Gopal Bhatta Goswami, who had a history in Archana, or worship of the deity, compiled it into a book known as Hari Bhakti Vilas. So Prabhupada wanted a book that people who went for Bhakti Shastri, who's here for Bhakti Shastri? Leo was telling me you're for Bhakti Shastri. Now, has anybody mentioned to you that you're going to be trained in Archana at the end of that Bhakti Shastri? No, they haven't. Therefore, this is a 1976 letter from Srila Prabhupada that I cunningly took from my files. Then, what does Prabhupada say? He links Bhakti Shastri with becoming a Brahmin. And then he says, all Brahmins will be responsible to learn this book. I would like to have the manuscript ready as soon as possible, preferably by Gaura Purnima. So what are we going to do about that, folks? So then we took it seriously, right here in this country. And the manuscript was prepared where? Upstairs, in what's now the treasury. In the treasury, here at Bhaktivedanta Manor, the manuscript and the layout and the book was designed, and it was taken to Prabhupada. Prabhupada had asked for, they said, how big do you want the book to be, Srila Prabhupada? He said 20 pages. To get Archana into a 20-page document. Well, they came up with a document that was something like 86 pages. Prabhupada approved it. It was published here. So here at Bhaktivedanta Manor, we were the first temple in the whole world to start doing, you know, the Vishesh Achman, and to start doing a few mudras, to start applying things in deity worship. First temple. And we used to get, I remember, for a year or two afterwards, we used to get sannyasis coming here, and they would see us doing different things, and they would say, what are you doing? I remember one sannyasi saying to me, what are you doing that for? Where did you get that from? I said, Archana Padati. He said, what's the Archana Padati? Did Prabhupada write that book? Well, Prabhupada asked for it to be written. Oh, okay. It was very contentious. Prabhupada had asked for it to be written. So the point here is that there are two ways, Prabhupada says, of approaching Godhead. Two ways of approaching Godhead. There is the Bhagavad Vidhi, which Prabhupada always translates as the Vidhi, or the rules of the Bhagavatam, which mean the nine processes of hearing, chanting, etc., like that. Then we have Pancharatriki Vidhi, Pancha, five, Ratra, nights, the knowledge of worship that was taught over five nights. Did I say five? Five nights by the Lord himself personally to A, Lakshmi, B, Shiva, four Kumaras, Narada Muni, and the other one I always forget. Huh? Brahma. Maybe. That's a good call. So then, from Lord Shiva, we get a book called the Ahir Budnya Samhita. And this is a book of how to worship Narayan, how to worship Lord, how to worship Lord Krishna. And from Lakshmi, we get the book, the Lakshmi Tantra. And from Narada Muni, we get the book, the Narada Pancharatra, which is embraced as our book. So from Pancharatra literature, Gopal Bhatta Goswami took 250 different verses and put them into the Hari Bhakti Vilas. If you read the Hari Bhakti Vilas, it's a 5-volume set like this, sitting on your shelf. And that's enough. There's enough verses for you to get on with for life. If you strip that all down, you get to 3 books. One is called the Satkriya Saradipika, one is called the Archanapadati, and another one is called the Pratishtavidhi, which means deity installation. So, and the important one for us, the Prabhupada's talking about here, is the samskars. Now, I talked to my local vicar. I said, sometimes, we get people who just come once a year to the temple. He said, oh, you're lucky. He said, you get people who come once a year? I get people who just come 3 times in their life. They come for christenings of their children. They come for a wedding. So wedding, christening, and funeral. He said, after that, I don't see them. He said, you're very lucky if they come once a year. So what is our responsibility to people who perhaps don't come to the temple very much at all? Do we have a responsibility? What do you think? Yeah, we do, don't we? Because these are the people that are going to come to the school of bhakti. Haribo! What responsibility do you have to the people who come twice a year? When does a person become someone that you have responsibility for? When do they become a congregation member? I get a lot of people, I don't know why, maybe it's because I was doing the weddings for a long time. I was doing a wedding a week or 2 weddings a week or sometimes 3 weddings in a day. I've done 3 weddings in a day before. Bhaktivedanta Manor used to work me really hard. 3 weddings in a day, 2 here and 1 at Heathrow Airport I did. Anyway, people used to come and they needed a priest to sign a form, the blue form, that would help their children go to a Catholic school. Okay? Because to go to a Catholic school, one of the qualifications is that you're a regular member of your congregation. Perhaps I shouldn't say this, but I had to interview them to ask if they were regular members. I said, are you regular members? And then we go, We will be. Sign. So the point is that to go to a Catholic school, which is acknowledged to be in many cases educationally a better school than a normal school. That's why people want to get their kids in. You either have to be a Catholic, your parents have to be a Catholic, or you have to go to church like that. Or you have to be a member of a religious community. And the priest of that religious community has to sign on your behalf. Then you sign that completed paper. So we had people coming. I got married here. When did you get married here? Well, 25 years ago. Have you come since? Well, we will do. So when people want religion, they will come for some reason. So what is ISKCON's responsibility to that level of spiritual evolution? Well, the Prime Minister of this country, mentioned no names, he was standing in front of us many years ago, the Prime Minister of that period, and said that the reason we appreciate organizations like yours is because you help people to have a vision how they can have a be a better version of themselves. I thought, well, that's a nice thing to say. Thank you very much. I'll vote for you next time. You teach people how to have a better vision of themselves and try to become a better version of themselves. And you also, religions also get people to do good things for others. And at some stage, we have to accept responsibility. As the religions of this country go into decline due to Kali Yuga, and as the members of the International Society for Krishna Consciousness rise in numbers, we shall have to be the Brahmins and the priests for the future community. But as they always used to say in the Mission Impossible movies, he says, your mission, should you decide to accept it. Should you decide to accept it? Okay. So the thing is, how many people would you like to be responsible for? Because you can be responsible for as many as you like. It may involve you going into government. It may involve you going into education. Just like our Naveen Krishna. He took responsibility for the education of children and created 7 schools of 3,500 children, and now getting an education in which the deities of Gaur Nittai are in their classroom from the moment they come into the school to the moment they leave the senior school, where the portrait of A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada is hanging in the lobby of every school, where the little Muslim children come to school, and before they, when they go home, before they eat, okay, they're sitting down to their non-Hindu food in their Muslim homes at night, and they're putting their hands together like this, and they're singing, Sharirarabhijajaljitandriyate. And the Muslim father and mother saying, why are you doing that? Oh, it's something we do at school. And then they're inviting their parents to come on Rath Yatra. And the government inspectors are coming to that school and seeing white children, black children, Muslim children, Jewish children going to a school and working together, celebrating together in a non-sectarian way. And they're asking the devotees who run the school, how do you do that? How do you do that? How do you manage to get people from so many different backgrounds to work together and learn together with no stresses in what is nominally a Hindu school? So it may involve you branching out. But to the degree that you accept responsibility for helping others, that's the degree to which you become a generous, compassionate Brahmin. Brahmin isn't just about learning shlokas. Brahmin is about becoming Brahminical. Brahminical isn't just about keeping clean, although that's part of it. Brahminical isn't just about worshipping God for yourself. Brahmin means worshipping God for others. How about that concept? You're worshipping God for others. This is Brahmin. There's only 6 things that a Brahmin is allowed to do. 4 of them don't bring in very much money. But what he does is he does things for other people. He does the shlokas so that other people who may not be able to do those shlokas, they be able to take part in the ceremony. And that ceremony is a purificatory ceremony. What is purification? Purification means to remove that which is impure and to take something back to its original state. What is this mud? Is this mud or is it diamond? No. Well, let's have this mud away. Let's wash this mud away. So purification. So we are involved in purification. Now, it's all right for you who are purifying your mind and body and senses every single day by the chanting of Krishna, Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare. That's all right for you. But spare a thought for others who don't have a daily purification in that way. You're listening to the sound of the conch. You're gazing on the beautiful features of Radha Gokulananda. But spare a thought for others who don't have that. What are you going to do to help them become purified in their life? And in some people's lives, isn't it, Jayadev? Some people's lives, And Jayadev's worked with people all over the world of many different stripes. But in many cases, the people that you work with, Jayadev, have got a heck of a lot of mud on top of the diamond. Isn't it? Anybody who's a preacher, like Jayadev, knows that you have to bend in order to be a preacher. You have to be accommodating in order to be a preacher. You have to be unlimitedly kind to be a preacher. Otherwise, you'll give up. Otherwise, you'll give up. You know. There was one time when I was tired of bowing down because I wanted to see Prabhupada, and I wanted Prabhupada to see me. So I was standing at the back of the room, and after Guru Puja, of course, Jai Om Vishnupada, and everybody bowed down. Okay, and Prabhupada was sitting here, and I thought, I'm not going to bow down. I'm just going to look at Prabhupada. Why not? So I looked at Prabhupada, and I was the only one in the room standing. And he looked at me. And I looked at him, and he looked at me, and I thought to myself, well, this is awkward, but I'm not going to... You know, maybe he'll ask questions. So anyway, he just, you know, looked away at a certain point. But the point is that... What was the point? I can't remember. Oh, yeah. Years later, I thought of that moment, and I thought, what on earth was I thinking? Who did Prabhupada think that he had? You know, He came to Bhaktivedanta Man in 1973 because of the whole Beatles thing and the Hare Krishna, my sweet Lord. And that was the Hare Krishna, the Beatles. Bhaktivedanta Manor was actually George Harrison's house. George Harrison was living right here. And if you came, you might see George Harrison sort of walk down a corridor. So we had a lot of people. A lot of people. And Prabhupada's version of events, he wrote to Mukunda, the whole temple room filled with young people who had shaved their heads. Nothing worse than a person who's just shaved their head, let me tell you. They look awkward in it. Especially when everybody else around them was having hair this length. So anyway, especially when they've nicked it a few times. So then Prabhupada wrote to Mukunda. He wrote to Mukunda. He said, I'm very happy that you have attracted a lot of happy young people. He said, but please make sure that you go to the universities and attract leaders who can become leaders of the community. He said, because they may stay, but they may not. He said, today they are here, tomorrow they may be gone. He said, how long will they stay? Jumping, jumping, jumping. Hari bol, hari bol, hari bol. Yeah. So Prabhupada knew. Prabhupada wanted to build a movement which was capable of doing two things: training and refining and purifying its newest members, but also giving its services to the world. There was no point of creating a movement for the salvation of the world if that movement and the world don't engage. So we have to think, where does ISKCON actually engage with the world in doing beneficial activities for purification? Where there is a need for a Brahmin, people step forward. But where there's no need for a Brahmin, then people will, they won't know what you've got until you show them. So they may not need a shloka, but they may need an intelligent application of a shloka. Just like the king needed some intelligent people. He said, I need to know how heavy that elephant is. You know the story? And then all the Brahmins couldn't, they were measuring and, you know, trying to, you know, lift up a leg, and one person had the trunk, and the trunk was on some scales, and he said, well, the trunk missing, so the whole elephant is sort of like 16 times the weight of the trunk, perhaps, but we don't know for sure. King said, that's no good. I need someone who can tell me. And so one Brahmin came, and he said, is the office still open? I can help you. So he took a big boat, and he made a mark on the side of the boat. Then he brought the boat back, put the elephant in the boat, took the boat, made another mark, and put sacks of corn, of which he knew the weight, And gradually, the boat was weighed down until it came. He measured the corn. He said, here's the measure of the elephant. He said, king said, you are true Brahmin. You're hired. So a Brahmin isn't just a person who knows shlokas. A Brahmin is a thoughtful professor of logic, a professor of common sense, a professor of how can we help people to be raised up. You know, there is actually a stabbing epidemic, a knife crime epidemic, just 6 miles away from where we are. The whole of London is every single day there's knife crime. Now, if we were socially orientated, we would be thinking, how can we help with that? What's an intelligent application? But in order to do that, you may have to be very courageous. You may have to have not stab vests, but you may have to have sufficient intelligence to go to a government department and say, look, this may not be politically correct, but here's your problem. A Brahmin is meant to cut through all the political correctness, you know, chiff-chaff, and say, this is the real essence of the problem. This is how to solve it. That's a Brahmin. Otherwise, if we play the violin while Rome burns, nobody will be thankful. It's like someone said, it's like my daughter's been hearing this, you know, since she was born. Be relevant, be relevant. So this is her third time in the last month on BBC Radio this morning. She'll be on BBC Two. Listening audience of 7 million. Very good. She gets the message over very nicely. They like her. And from that, she gets other interesting engagements. What gets our voice on the radio? What gets our voice on television? What gets our voice in the newspapers? Are we always going to be introduced with the words, you may have seen them on the street, with the ching, ching, ching of the cartels, of the cymbals, or if they're cheap journalists, the tambourines as they go down Oxford Street, with a swish of the ponytail and a flash of the orange robes. But what they're really all about is, da-da-da-da-da. Is it really, is that all we're consigned to, sort of marginal footnote in history? Or will we endeavor to be relevant? So the point about the radio is that somebody from TV was asking if the devotees could come on. Oh no, someone was suggesting to a TV producer, you could have the devotees of Krishna on. And then the person said, really? And this is what he said, it's a killer quote. He said, have they got an opinion about anything? Now, there's two opinions that you can have. One is a sort of selfish, soteriological opinion. And that opinion is as follows. The world is screwed. It's all Maya. It's illusion. Become Krishna conscious. Get out. Love Krishna. Chant Hare Krishna and be happy. That's a real isolationist, insular opinion to have. But you will find that many unfortunate devotees have that opinion. The other opinion is, how the heck can I make this wonderful wisdom that Prabhupada has given relevant to the problems of today? That's another way of looking at it. And that is the way that we will become increasingly relevant in the world. So, Hare Krishna, thank you very much. Any questions? Any challenges? Any finger-pointing? It's breakfast. I'll finish in 10 minutes, but yeah.
Thank you.
Siddhartha, you have my permission.
Hare Krishna.
You're already making yourself relevant. Thank you.
You were mentioning this, the pyramid scheme. So the Brahmins are at the top.
Yeah.
But even amongst the devotees that get Brahmin initiation, there seems to be another pyramid of those Brahmins who are really excel in doing what you're talking about in educating and bringing things to a point of relevancy. So just because someone has Brahmin initiation, does that really mean they're a Brahmin, or is that something that, just like in first initiation, that brings a person to the point where they can actually come to the medical platform. I mean, how do we actually understand who is a Brahmin?
Who is a Brahmin? Question. You know by the symptoms, by the lakshana, vipra lakshana. You'll know by the symptoms. Just like Kripacharya, he's a general, but he has the symptoms of a Brahmin. Therefore, he's engaged in this brahminical samskar for the birth of Parikshit, because he can function in that way. He knows what to do, and his behavior is notable. So you always know a person by the symptoms. The Brahmin thread or the mantra that has been given to you is an opportunity for you to become purified. It's a means by which you become purified. Do not think, as soon as you have the Brahmin thread, that you now I am a Brahmin. Yes, you're a Brahmin, but you're at the bottom. You're a Brahmin, but you're at the beginning. Do not think I've become a PhD as soon as you enter the university. This is a long period of learning from the beginning of a university to being a PhD. So Brahmin is as Brahmin does. So those are the symptoms by which you work. And look at the symptoms by which you work. Look at the symptoms by which you work. Do they match up to the symptoms of that which is described by Krishna for the symptoms of a Brahmin in the Bhagavad Gita? If not, then you have a ways to go. But we are all Brahmins according to the Pancharatrik system. Pancharatrik system means Pancha Samskara, five elements to the reformatory process. First one, tapa. In some Vaishnava traditions, you get branded. In our tradition, we have dropped that, but you get branded by your intense tapa, your austerity. Then you get nam, you get a name, then you get mantra, and then you get various other things. You get, what is it? Tapa, pundra. Pundra, tilak. So these are reformatory procedures. But simply because you get those, it doesn't mean that you are qualified. We have a difficulty now. You know what the difficulty is? That people come here to Bhaktivedanta Manor and we stamp everybody with the tilak. Don't we? And then they go to McDonald's on the corner and they're eating a hamburger. It's been noticed. There's even a TV comedy show which unfortunately talked about it. So you can't just stamp a person with tilak, and that is the reformatory process. No, the tapa has to be there. Just like mantra, you can't just give a person a mantra. There are many people who now sing the Gayatri mantra all over the internet, you see, and with a harmonium, as if I am dispensing this. No, this mantra is not to be given publicly. It's meant to be given privately after you've qualified yourself. So just because you've listened to the Gayatri mantra doesn't mean you're a Brahmin. Just because you have tilak on doesn't mean that you, by your qualities, you will be known. So you've got tilak on, but you're smoking. You've got tilak on, but you're in McDonald's. I went to the Hare Krishna temple, but now I'm in McDonald's. What is your qualification? So we have to be careful. In the old days, we used to give people names also. We used to give names quite cheaply. If you came in and, your name was Pete, you'd be Parikshit Pete. Or if you came in and your name was Kevin, you'd be Krishna Kevin. Or sometimes we used to say Krishna, and we'd drop the Kevin and we'd just call him Krishna. Because we very urgently wanted people to raise up. But unfortunately, Parikshit Pete was, one time we had breakfast, we finished the Bhagavatam class here. You remember Ramanashinga? We finished the Bhagavatam class, and I went out into the shoe room, and there was 100 policemen around Bhaktivedanta Manor. I tell a lie. 55 around Bhaktivedanta Manor, and about 6 dogs. They're all waiting for Parikshit Pete. Parikshit Pete hadn't been so sweet. So the police gave him a treat and swept him off his feet. And the lock on the cell was pretty neat. And his spiritual life was beat. Anyway, so you cannot just reform a person by stamping them or naming them or baptizing them. But this is one anga, one element. The true transformation must be within. But this gives them an opportunity. And many people cannot get it together to have a reformed life. Most people. Therefore, there's a certain period of your life when you try to be reformed. For a Christian, it's Lent and Christmas and Easter. For a Muslim, it's Ramadan. During the Ramadan period, you fast and you're more prayerful. And for others, it's Yom Kippur. And for others, it's there's one time of the year where you really work hard at being purifying yourself. But they can't manage it for the other 300 days of the year. So it's in those spaces that Brahmins reach out and help people at a certain functional part of their life. I went from giving class here into the prasadam room, like we're all going to do imminently, and one man was sitting there and he was in tears. His tears were dripping into his porridge. I said, "Well," I sat down beside him. I said, "What's the matter?" He said, "I've lost everything." And usual people, when they say that I've lost everything, they mean their money. And then he told me his story. His story took quite a long time. But he'd gone out for a newspaper on Sunday morning, just the week previously. He'd come back to find his house on fire. His house was burned. His wife and two children were inside, both died, both burned completely. He'd lost everything, literally. So in that moment of great tragedy and grief, he'd come to the Hare Krishna temple for a set of ears, basically. We never saw him again, but this was the place he chose to come to. He wasn't a Hindu, wasn't an Indian. Okay, he just thought, let me go somewhere where people will be kind, compassionate, and they'll be able to listen to me. So somehow or another, he'd worked out that because these people are giving out books on kindness, compassion, and wisdom on the street, that when I get to that place, they'll be the same sort of people as the people that I read about in the book. So he came, and we were able to do something for him. Yes, just before we go, last question.
Hare Krishna. How can we develop the urgency to develop these qualities? How can we have urgency to preach and urgency to be Brahmanical, actually?
Well, you know, I sometimes think that you need a guru who's going to shout at you occasionally, because that was Prabhupada. A guru that would tell you off occasionally. A guru that's going to tell you that not everything is peaches and cream. A guru that's going to tell you that you're seriously stupid and in need of learning. Because unless you have that in your life, who's going to do it for you? Your God brothers and God sisters won't do it. Well, the God sisters would do it, but you don't talk to them and they don't talk to you. The gods, it's like when I got married, I found out what all the girls at Bhaktivedanta Manor actually thought about me. I wasn't as great as I thought I was. As a brahmachari, I thought I was pretty good. Then I found out what they all thought about me after I got married. It wasn't so great, let me tell you. But they don't speak to you. The men, they may not speak to you because, why? Because you're a brahmachari and the guys in white don't want to say, because nothing that you do is wrong. Your mentor may not want to speak to you because they don't want to blow you out, because people know that you can change mentors. And your guru doesn't speak to you because he doesn't know you. So who is there in ISKCON that will tell you anything that you need to know about yourself? So for God's sake, find someone who will tell you that you're not peaches and cream, that your life is not going totally well, that your behavior is a bit, you know, up and down, and that you need improvement. It's not going to be me. Okay, I've already got people that I do that for. But at least, for God's sake, find someone that's going to correct you. One of the problems is we don't have those people. It's become a little easy. And wherever there's ease, there's comfort. Remember, there's comfort. We attract comfort lovers. And comfort lovers can't be Brahmins. Hare Krishna.